This Janet Mufford Today podcast is brought to you by Trinity Debt Management, a nonprofit organization that helps people struggling with credit card debt. Their number is 800-793-8752. That's 800-793-8752 or trinitycredit.org.
This is Janet Mufford Today.
Our confidence is in Christ alone.
Are we going to stand with God come what may?
If the Word of God says it, I believe it.
And that's the way it is.
And now, here is Janet Mufford.
Thank you so much for joining us again. Well, it's fashionable in America today to bash Christianity, to bash Christians. And of course, this has always been a fashionable thing over the last 2,000 years all over the world. But in our nation, it's a more recent development, and it has caught a lot of Christians by surprise. How do we respond when someone says Christianity is a myth, or it's antithetical to science, or it's hateful and intolerant? In fact, Christianity is not only true, but as my next guest puts it, it is good for you. So we're going to talk about it now with Dr. Michael Foley, who is Associate Professor of Patristics in the Great Texts Program at Baylor University and author of the book we'll be talking about called The Politically Incorrect Guide to Christianity. It's great to have you here, Dr. Foley. How are you?
I'm well, Janet. Thanks so much.
Thank you for being here. All right. Now, you kick things off by saying Christianity is the world's most politically incorrect religion, and I would agree with you on that. Why do you think that's the case?
Well, it's just a question of definition. The very idea of political correctness was coined by the Marxists in the 1930s. And politically incorrect was the label they used for anything that was opposed to Marxism. And the religion opposed to Marxism was Christianity.
Yes. Right. So we still have some of those problems today. Where would you say the biggest points of problem are, if I can put it that way, where we see the new atheists going after Christianity, we see all sorts of skeptics and progressives going after Christianity. Where would you say the battle rages with the most intensity right now?
Good question. It's hard to say because in some respects, the battle has already been waged with the sort of elite of American society, and the battle went to the secular left, that they pretty much control a lot of the important governing organs of American society. Yeah. But obviously there are pockets of resistance everywhere, and it's not that, of course, that Christians in the United States aren't able to practice their faith freely, but they are, of course, increasingly finding their religious liberty threatened.
Yes, very true. Right. We're seeing that all over the place. And this is interesting. When you talk about the existence of God, for example, right at the outset, people like the new atheists say that even believing in God is putting superstition over science. So when you begin to even talk about something as basic as God's existence, how do you make the case to people that this is not a matter of merely putting superstition over science?
Well, I would point out to them that rather than being opposed to science, Christianity is actually the godfather of modern science, that it was the Christian Middle Ages, far from being a period of superstition or backwardness, that laid the foundation for modern science as we know it today. If it had not been for the Christian West, there would have been no emergence of modern science.
That is such a great point. And what would you use when you're explaining that to somebody who doubts you? What is some of the evidence for that?
Well, I would just start with, what is it that makes modern science possible? Like, what would give a human being, in a sense, the courage to scientifically inquire into the universe? There would have to be two things in place. Number one, he would have to have some faith in the power of the human mind to be able to discover reality.
Right.
And number two, he would have to have some faith that reality was discoverable, that there were predictable, coherent, intelligible patterns that are somehow governing the behavior of the universe. And those two convictions come from Christianity, that Christianity teaches that man is made in the image and likeness of God, that the faculty of reason is damaged by original sin, to be sure, but the faculty of reason is capable of knowing truth, and it's knowing the truth of the universe. God created the universe to be a reflection of his own intelligibility and intelligence. So when you have not just faith, but a faith in reason, then you have the possibility for science.
That's excellent. So how did we get to a place then where so many are claiming that science is above God when, in fact, if you go back to that time period that you were just discussing, it was Christians in a Christian worldview that fueled science in the first place. How did they get us so fooled that science is versus God rather than a belief in God can fuel your scientific inquiry?
Well, this is an old battle, and it's certainly not just the new atheists, but we've seen ever since the age of the Enlightenment people using science as a replacement of religion.
Right.
That the way they drew the map, science was the realm of progress and enlightenment, religion was the realm of superstition and backwardness. So basically, science is being used to advance a secularist agenda. But science is like anything else. It's a tool. It can be used well by good people, and it can be used badly by bad people.
For sure. So how would you defend the existence of God just through reason and judgment? As you mentioned, surely we still have the problem of sin. But if you were just to do an intellectual exercise trying to discern whether or not God could exist, what do you think is a good argument in that regard to bring up to a skeptic?
Yeah, it depends on the skeptic. It depends where they're coming from. A lot of people are suspicious about the existence of God because of the existence of evil in the universe. There are a lot of different angles from which people come. But I would basically point out that the very fact that there is an intelligible universe, a coherent reality that scientists can explore, implies that there is someone or something that organized or gave this intelligibility to the universe.
Good.
The fact that there is an order implies an orderer.
Good. Yeah. Right. Right. It does make sense, but I wonder how many people really take the time to walk through the logical steps, or if they are steps to be avoided because they don't want to come to a logical conclusion on it. They'd rather stay where they are.
That's true, and there's a great line from St. Augustine of Hippo: a lot of people who choose not to believe in God have a good reason for doing so.
Right, exactly right, yes. So now, once the existence of God is established, let's just assume we've started there. For a lot of people, the next thing is, well, why should we believe in Jesus Christ? You say that God came down and became man. You talk about a Trinity of Father, Son, and Holy Spirit. Why is that not only true, but why is that good for us? And why do those things matter so much when we are looking at the entire picture of our own existence?
Well, I'll channel the great French apologist Pascal. That Christian story that you just outlined is the only story that truly explains to us who we are. Mm. And in particular, it explains man's greatness and man's wretchedness. It explains how we are this amazing creature made in the image and likeness of God with these extraordinary capacities, and yet sometimes we act so much worse than any beast could ever act.
True.
So there's this weird monstrosity, a kind of glorious monstrosity to man, and the science can't explain that. Other religions really don't come close to explaining that. The only religion, the only thing that really explains that well is Christianity, with its doctrine of original sin and its redemption in Jesus Christ.
Exactly. I mean, you can stay on an intellectual level and talk about science all day, but when you get into the moral problem of mankind, there I would think the new atheists are on a little bit shaky ground because to some extent they can't explain it.
Oh, heavens no. I mean, when it comes to moral matters, scientists are deer in a headlight.
Right. Right. Let's switch the subject back to science again. I want to talk about Darwin again and how dumb you are, Christians. Yeah, exactly. That's what we see all the time. And yet this is a really important point to make because it is important to our discussions when we're out there and listening to these claims that Christianity is a myth and all of these things that we say about the Bible can't possibly be true. We're going to go to a quick break. We're going to come back with Dr. Michael Foley. His book is called The Politically Incorrect Guide to Christianity. You're listening to Janet Mefford Today, and we'll be right back. This is Janet Mefford for Trinity Debt Management, a nonprofit Christian organization that helps people get out of debt. Here is John's story.
When our daughter Emma was born, my wife and I took a hard look at our finances for the first time, and we didn't like what we saw. My wife suggested that I call Trinity. Immediately when I spoke with the counselor for the first time, she was very helpful and put us on a plan for success. Right away, we knew we'd called the right place. We just want everyone out there who might be in our situation to know that there's help.
If credit card debt has you down, Trinity Debt Management can help. Trinity will consolidate your accounts, put a stop to late fees, and reduce your interest rate by up to 60%. Save thousands and become debt-free for keeps. Trinity provides practical solutions and creates hope for tomorrow. Call Trinity at 1-800-793-8752. That's 1-800-793-8752. 1-800-793-8752. Are you among the millions of Americans who feel uncertain when it comes to their health care? As a Christian, are you looking for health care that doesn't violate your morals and convictions? We are happy to inform you that there is a solution, and that solution is Liberty HealthShare. Liberty HealthShare is a community of like-minded Christians who work together to pay for their medical costs. It allows you to decide how, when, and where you will access health care, so you can make the best choice for you and your family. Starting at $107 a month for a single, up to $449 a month for a family. That's mom, dad, and all the kids. This is how healthcare should be. For more information, call 855-585-4237 or visit libertyhealthshare.org. That's libertyhealthshare.org, and regain control over your healthcare costs. That number again, 855-585-4237 or libertyhealthshare.org. Together, we're changing healthcare for good. We are back on Janet Mefford today. So glad you're here and so glad to have with us Dr. Michael Foley. He is Associate Professor of Patristics in the Great Texts Program at Baylor University and author of The Politically Incorrect Guide to Christianity, Why It's True, Why It Matters, and Why It's Good for You. You know, another thing that you talk about in the book, Dr. Foley, is the progressive myth. And you make the point that progressivism fails to capture either the grandeur of our existence or the enigma of our evil deeds, which really ties back into what we were discussing before the break. What have you seen in that regard about the progressive myth and how it really ultimately fails?
Well, there is a very strong idea in the Enlightenment of this myth of progress, that man is on this constant march towards essentially a classless, egalitarian society. It morphed in sort of morphed into a Marxist vision, thanks to Marx.
Yeah.
And the problem with that, of course, is that if you really believe that, you're not going to understand how man can sort of transcend his own cultural milieu.
Right.
That we just become a product of historical epoch, and that's just kind of belittling to human greatness. I mean, there are some great figures in our history that stood above their times. And so you don't understand man's greatness when you buy into the myth of progress. And then neither do you understand his depravity.
Right.
Because if we are just a product of history, well, can history really explain Adolf Hitler?
Hmm.
I mean, it's only the mystery of iniquity as Christianity understands it that can explain these things.
Right. Well, and if you look at the history of Marxism, even in the 20th century, what happened in the Soviet Empire, here you had Stalin wiping out 20 million people and you had Hitler killing millions in the Holocaust. And yet in the Soviet Empire, here they're saying things need to be fair. You know, the proletariats need to unite and let's make everything fair. Well, you go, I've been to the Soviet Union when it was under communism. And what you saw was the Politburo living like they were high on the hog and all the rest of the people were reduced to the lowest level of poverty and dependence on government. It didn't elevate man at all. It elevated the Politburo and the people who had imposed the system on the people against their will.
Well, and that's the dangerous thing about all of these utopian visions, especially the ones that claim to be aiming for a classless, egalitarian society. They all have a little footnote that you have to read the fine print in that says, until we get there, we need an unaccountable elite to guide you towards the promised land.
Yeah.
And that's where you get the Politburo of the Soviet Union, and that's where you get the leftist elite of today.
You do. But you never quite get there, do you? That's why the word progress works so well for them. We're always on the journey, but we never quite get to utopia.
Exactly. And they're quite sincere in getting to utopia. Unfortunately, I think their vision of utopia is a dystopia. It's a nightmare. But you're right. In the meantime, they are going to be living as the elites.
Yeah, for sure. Now, one of the things that we talked about a little earlier was all the problems that we're seeing in our society now with attacks on religious liberty. So much of this is tied to the LGBT agenda. What do you see within the worldview of that agenda that is not only wrong, but also harmful in light of the fact that Christianity is true?
Well, one of the things that sort of surprised me when I researched into this more is that on the surface, the LGBT movement is there to help people find their true identities. In a sense, you could say to help them celebrate their true nature or who they truly are. But the more you actually look into what it stands for, the more you realize this really is a war on human nature.
Yes.
Implied behind all of this is a kind of hostility to one's own body.
True.
You know, that so I can be whatever I am, but if I'm a woman trapped in a man's body, that means, you know, God made a mistake, and I can go and get a sex reassignment surgery that destroys healthy body parts.
Right.
For no other reason except that I'm under some kind of, you know, psychological confusion. So it really is a sort of tragic movement, because rather than liberate and rather than celebrate nature, it takes a very cynical view towards our God-given human nature.
Yeah, and what I've noticed about this movement that's very ironic is they're all about personal autonomy until somebody comes out of that movement and says, well, now I'm a Christian. There was a viral video that just came out recently where this young woman was saying, I lived a lesbian lifestyle, now I've become a Christian, I've left it behind. And boy, did she get attacked for saying it. And I thought, if you guys are really for personal autonomy, shouldn't you be celebrating her personal identity and finding it? And it doesn't work that way, though.
It does not work that way. And this ties into a broader inconsistency with the secular left. They are extremely intolerant of Christianity.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. And is this part and parcel of going back to the moral problem of man? I don't want to deal with Christianity as it actually is. In many cases, they want to create a new form of Christianity that is more tolerant, but it turns out not to be faithful to the Bible.
Oh, you're absolutely right. They are trying to change the Christian religion. They're trying to remake it into their own image, where, as you rightly know, the point is not to make Christianity into our image, but the point is for us to be remade in the image of Christ.
Right.
So they're getting it exactly in reverse. But there is a good reason why the secular left has such an animus towards Christianity, and I discovered this in the course of researching the book. It is simply this. The secular left is not simply a political ideology or a set of policy prescriptions. It is a new religion.
Yes.
And as a new religion, it looks at Christianity and it sees it as a threat. And in a sense, they're right. Christianity is the competition.
I agree with you on that. Who would you say is their God? Is God self?
Yeah, that's a good question. Personal autonomy seems to be the ultimate God. But in some respects, I don't know if this is the only God. Maybe it's a polytheistic religion.
Mm.
But in some respects, the state is God.
Yeah, true.
If anything, even if it's not the official God, for all of the visions of the secular left to come true, they need an extremely powerful state to make it happen.
For sure.
So politics is God in some respects.
Very much so. Yeah, we're all living that dream. We see that all the time. But when we go back to the basics of Christian theology, Christianity is all about the person and work of Jesus Christ, his death on the cross for sin and his resurrection from the dead. So when you are talking about Christianity being good for you, what do you say to a secular progressive, for example, about why Christ dying on the cross and being risen from the dead on the third day is good for you in terms that they understand?
Yeah, I think I would point out, first of all, and this is the hard part, before you can really appreciate what Christ did for us, you really have to get a sense of how messed up you are.
True.
And a lot of people are in self-denial about that, right? We live in an age that prefers to talk about syndromes rather than sins.
Yep.
So in some respects, the first step is an unpleasant one. You have to convince your interlocutor of how utterly depraved he is.
Yeah, right.
But once you do get a dose of self-knowledge and you realize, gosh, I'm not what I should be. I am a sinner. Then you can start to appreciate the need for a redeemer.
Oh, I love that. It's so funny, and I've heard it pointed out before, and I think this is really great. How in the world can you look at a progressive vision for creating a utopia on Earth when you can't even control your own mouth when you're having road rage? You know what I'm saying? Or whatever the example happens to be. You can't even change yourself. How are you going to change the world?
That's right, exactly. And, you know, the good news is that the secular left is deeply concerned about morality. Now, I don't like its definition of morality, but at least they have a very lively moral sensibility. And that can be a point of engagement between a secular mindset and Christians. We share your concern for the good. We understand what it means to be personally responsible, but we see things a different way. Maybe you could try to see it like this for a while.
That's good. So when you get to the ultimate question about if there's a God, why is there evil? What sort of response do you think is a good one to offer on that question?
Well, I really like C.S. Lewis, who was a big influence on the book. I like the way he put it, that basically, if you are to have love, you have to have free will. And if you have free will, there has to be the possibility for choosing evil. And God did not choose to create a bunch of automatons, because automatons, they can be programmed to show signs of love, but true love has to be from the motion of a free will. Mm. And God is a hopeless romantic. He made man knowing that man would still sin and turn against him. But making a creature with free will was the only way to have a creature capable of loving in return.
Yes, that freedom had to be there for you to not be a robot. And they certainly are against being robots, too. So that's a good thing to work in.
That's right.
It's incredible. Yeah, I think it really does fundamentally come down to talking about the trouble we're in as human beings. And the unique part of Christianity, obviously, is that it's the only religion in the world where God came down to man rather than man trying to work his way up to God, which never, ever, ever works.
Exactly. And we're still kind of in the Christmas season, depending on how you define the Christmas season. And, you know, there was the big thing of the 12 days of Christmas that lasted from December 25th to the Feast of the Epiphany, January 6th. And those were historically 12 wonderful days that celebrate precisely what you're talking about. The ultimate inversion, where God nestles in the womb of one of his creatures and is born to serve us. This is a crazy, topsy-turvy arrangement. There's nothing else in the world. There's no other story that comes close to this giddy inversion of the order of things. It's just so wonderful.
It really is the best news ever. And a great book, The Politically Incorrect Guide to Christianity, Dr. Michael Foley with us. So good to have you, Dr. Foley. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Janet.
Absolutely. God bless. We'll be right back on Janet Mefford Today. This Janet Mefford Today podcast is brought to you by Trinity Debt Management, a nonprofit organization that helps people struggling with credit card debt. Their number is 800-793-8752. That's 800-793-8752 or trinitycredit.org. Janet Mefford Today brought to you by Preborn. For your gift of $140, you can give an ultrasound to 5 women in crisis pregnancies. Call now 855-601-BABY, 855-601-2229. Or visit preborn.com. Well, we had the Republicans and the Democrats sitting down with President Trump in the bipartisan meeting, talking about the future of DACA. From my vantage point, I don't even know why we're talking about this. Politically speaking, I know why we're talking about this, but constitutionally speaking, I don't know why we're talking about this. It's unconstitutional. DACA is unconstitutional. That's just the way it is. It's not complicated. Steve King talked about this, the congressman from Iowa, as these negotiations have been underway. He said you can't have a plan that includes amnesty. He put up this post just a couple of days ago urging President Trump to steer clear of any plan that would begin with giving amnesty to nearly 800,000 illegal aliens shielded from deportation by the unconstitutional DACA, as we know, that came about because of President Obama. According to King, as Breitbart reports, such an amnesty deal, even if it's coupled with a plan to reduce legal immigration that would help Americans who are working in middle class, would come as, you know, the U.S.-Mexico border would be surging. I mean, this is what would end up happening. You'd have illegal aliens continuing to circumvent the rule of law, and you'd set the stage for more of this type of activity. That's the real key here. And I think that's what is not discussed as much as it ought to be discussed. But I'm going to start with this because I'm going to come back to that point in just a second. What's really interesting to me is this memo that's been circulating from the Center for American Progress Action Fund. Daily Caller reported on this. This is a memo that came out and has been going around to these allies calling on Democrats to refuse to offer any votes for Republican spending bills that don't offer a fix for Dreamers and instead appropriate funds to deport them because, as the memo says, it's a critical component of the Democratic Party's future electoral success. There's your answer, folks. That's what it's really all about. They can talk all day long about Dreamers who are crying and who are really upset and who are moping around because they didn't do anything wrong. It was the fault of their parents for coming here illegally, and they just want to have a job and work and do everything that they want to do just like anybody else. And this is the kind of rhetoric that we're hearing all the time. I want to play one cut of this because this was an interview that was done on, where else, CNN, with former Hillary Clinton campaign manager Patty Solis Doyle, and she pretty much said the quote that every leftist says when you're discussing the issue of the Dreamers and why we don't want to back an unconstitutional program, and this is always the response. Listen to cut five.
But I got to tell you guys, I travel the country. I am privileged to travel the country and talk on college campuses. And I cannot tell you the number of Dreamers who come up to me with tears in their eyes and fear in their hearts. They don't know whether they're going to be able to finish their degree. They don't know whether they're going to have to leave their siblings and go to another country, their families, that they don't know, a country that they don't know. So if we are willing to spend $1.5 trillion on a tax cut for big corporations and for the uber rich, I think $18 billion for a useless wall is worth it to keep these Dreamers here and to let them follow their dreams.
Yeah, they need to follow their dreams. They have tears in their eyes. So what? I'm not trying to be non-compassionate to people. I'm not. I say that kind of with a little tongue in cheek because that's not the whole issue here, and we shouldn't reduce it to a matter of compassion. It's not all about compassion. It's about the rule of law, and it's about the U.S. Constitution and whether or not we still believe in those things. And it's about the Americans who over the years have been very hurt by illegal immigration and by how jobs have been taken away and by how it has increased taxes that we've had to pay as people come across our borders and they're not contributing to the economy. They're a drain on the economy, and all the statistics back this up. But no, we have to be so compassionate because they have tears in their eyes. Well, what about the tears in the eyes of the Steinle family? You know, when we're talking about the broader issue of illegal immigration, why don't we talk about the Steinle family and Kate Steinle, their daughter, who they'll never see again because she was murdered. And I know that this illegal alien who was deported, what was it, five times and kept getting sanctuary in San Francisco? How come he wasn't gone? How come there wasn't cooperation with ICE? How come there wasn't a conviction in that case? Well, you know, it was a great conviction. It was a great, great trial. Everything went fine. Why does anybody have any problem with it? That's what the left has to say. And I say all lives matter, right? Right? Doesn't the life of Kate Steinle matter as much as the life of a Dreamer with a tear in the eye? At some point, you have to get away from the emotion of it all and come down on solid statistics and facts about the Constitution, the rule of law, and what is best for the American people who are citizens. And we've said it so many times, and yet we still seem to find our cries falling on deaf ears. And let me just remind all of us, as we know, when you go back to the presidential campaign season, you had President Trump getting traction because of this issue. This is what put him on the map as a feasible candidate, because he was the only one at the time who was speaking out with such emphasis and such passion on the fact that we needed to have a wall, that we needed to stop watching illegal immigration take over our country. We needed to care about Americans first. And that resonated. And it resonated with so many different types of people. Not all of them were super conservative. Not all of them were socially conservative. But that was an issue around which so many people were able to unify. Fundamentally, as has been said again and again and again, if you lose on the illegal immigration issue in the United States, the United States will be gone in time if you don't do something about it. The Democrats know this, but they're all in favor of it. They're all in favor of it. What do they care? What do they care? Because the bottom line is they want to continue to have not only election victories, they want to have a permanent power base and create a situation in which the Republicans can never hope to win an election. Now, let me give you an example of this. This is via the Gateway Pundit. There's a recent study that's been done of DACA Dreamers that found most of these new Democrat voters reside in Republican states. Paul Ryan, Mitch McConnell, people like that are determined to pass amnesty for this group of illegal aliens. And DACA, as they point out, and the amnesty of DACA could flip Arizona, it could flip Florida, it could flip Georgia, it could flip North Carolina to the Democrats. Now, what happens if you have a number of these states that have been so critical in past elections because they could have gone either way, depending on what the situation was and who the candidates were? If you have a permanent blue state in Arizona, Florida, Georgia, and North Carolina, how does the GOP win another national election? They don't, right? I mean, of course, you can always have another state go red, I suppose. But the bottom line is that it's all about maintaining power and then opening the borders. Opening the borders. This is the same crowd that was all about, we need to have more refugees. We need to have more refugees. We need to have more refugees. Why? You have the whole Soros thing. You have the whole UN thing. We need to have redistribution of population, because it's not fair that you have wealth in this part of the world in the West and you don't have it over here. And so you need to move people from one part of the world into this other part of the world and to make it fair. What do you think is happening in Europe? All sorts of horrible things are happening in Europe. And perhaps at some point, the mass population of Europe will rise up and realize it's been had with all this open borders talk. Well, they're not having enough babies. They can't replace their own population, so they need workers. So they open up their borders. Let everybody from the Middle East who wants to come here, let everybody from Africa who wants to come here, everybody who often involves Islam, let the Muslims come over here because they'll be good workers. They didn't really consider the ramifications of that and what happens if the statistics are borne out over time about what Europe will look like. It will change not only the demographic of Europe, it will change the religion of Europe. Think about that. Europe, which has been Christian, obviously not everybody in Europe has been a Christian. It's been dying out for quite a while. But you look at the rich history of the Reformation in Europe. You look at the rich history of the church and the spread of the gospel. And I mean, how can I condense hundreds of years in history into a two-minute commentary? But you see the point. It changes your country. It changes everything when you begin to open your borders and you begin to lose what you were. It's not that we're against immigration. It's not that we're against people coming here. All of us are immigrants, or our ancestors were immigrants. But the point is, you have to have laws. If you don't have laws, you have a free-for-all. And then, according to the left, you might have a permanent Democratic majority. We're going to come back. Interesting comments from Ann Coulter. We're going to play those for you when we come back. She had some great things to say on this. We'll be right back on Janet Mefford Today. Are you among the millions of Americans who feel uncertain when it comes to their health care? As a Christian, are you looking for health care that doesn't violate your morals and convictions? We are happy to inform you that there is a solution, and that solution is Liberty HealthShare. Liberty HealthShare is a community of like-minded Christians who work together to pay for their medical costs. It allows you to decide how, when, and where you will access health care, so you can make the best choice for you and your family. Starting at $107 a month for a single, up to $449 a month for a family. That's mom, dad, and all the kids. This is how healthcare should be. For more information, call 855-585-4237 or visit libertyhealthshare.org. That's libertyhealthshare.org, and regain control over your healthcare costs. That number again, 855-585-4237 or libertyhealthshare.org. Together, we're changing healthcare for good. Hi, this is Janet Mefford, and we're partnering with the Ministry of Preborn to save babies' lives through ultrasound. Here's how a nurse describes the power of an ultrasound.
Last week, just one example of a mom who came in was very abortion-minded, and when she saw the picture of her baby on ultrasound and saw that beating heart, it was a defining moment that just broke her, and she said, I just can't allow this baby to be killed, for her own words.
By letting a mother hear her baby's heartbeat and see her baby in her womb, she will choose life 80% of the time.
I cannot tell you how many times a baby's life is saved through ultrasound. It's just an incredible tool.
Will you help save babies' lives? For $140, you can sponsor free ultrasounds for 5 young women. All gifts are tax deductible. To donate, call now, 855-601-BABY. That's 855-601-2229. Or give securely at preborn.com. That's preborn.com. We are back on Janet Mefford today. Thank you so much for joining us. And we're talking a little bit about this mess of a meeting. Well, CNN called it that, you know, Republicans and Democrats and President Trump trying to get together and figure out how they can protect hundreds of thousands of dreamers from being deported. And this all comes down to the fact that the president said, I want the money for the wall. I want the money for the wall. If I don't get the money for the wall, then forget it. We're not going to have DACA. So he's got a bit of a bargaining chip here, whether or not this will play out the way he wants it to will be interesting to watch. And in a way, he's got Chuck Schumer in a corner. He really does, because there are states where you have these senators who are Democrats, but they come from states that like Trump. And so what are you going to do? What are you really going to do in the final analysis? Are you going to be willing to shut down the government over not building the wall? That'll be kind of interesting to see if that's something that he's really, really willing to go to the mat over. American Thinker had a good piece on this. President Trump engineered this dilemma for Chuck Schumer by rescinding Obama's executive order creating DACA, but giving Congress until March to come up with an alternative approach. That trap is now closing in on Schumer. And they mentioned this. He has 10 Democrat senators up for re-election in November in states that voted for Trump. So you've got Heidi Heitkamp, you've got Claire McCaskill, people like that. Are they going to be willing to tell their voters that they think amnesty for a group that includes MS-13 members is so important that the government ought to be shut down? Will they give him the money for the wall? We'll see how this all plays out. But we certainly can't continue to get behind DACA. Otherwise, we scuttle the rule of law and we scuttle the Constitution. So I want to go to these comments that Lou Dobbs and Ann Coulter were making regarding DACA. This was from a few days ago, but it's well worth listening to because Ann Coulter really has the right perspective on this issue with immigration and how America will be gone if you don't address this issue of illegal immigration. She had this to say about DACA and the deportation of the Dreamers. Listen to cut three.
It's the strangest thing. Trump just won on deporting illegals and building a wall. Why is the first thing we have to concentrate on, granting amnesty to illegal aliens? And I might add, the least attractive illegal aliens. I'd deport the Dreamers before deporting MS-13 members. There, you catch them, they at least say, okay, you got me. The Dreamers are all over Congress, the streets, TV, demanding that we grant. How dare you wait before excusing our lawbreaking. No, I want those guys first. Then we'll get the felons. And then, you know, the hardworking illegal aliens doing the gardening and so on. Everybody kind of likes them. They're so friendly. They're such hard workers. But the dreamers, number one.
Well, she makes a fair point when you see all of the activist dreamers demanding their rights to be here when they have no right to be here. So what about the issue of the 800,000 limit? Now, this is a very important point, because if you're going to give amnesty to 800,000 people, how in the world do you ensure that it will maintain that number? It's only going to be 800,000. It will never be more than that. You have 300,000 people who signed up through DACA. They don't even have to worry about the expiration of their reprieve until November. So what happens now? This is what Ann Coulter and Lou Dobbs talked about. Listen to cut four.
As for specifically Congress saying, no, only 800,000, no more. First of all, I again register my objection to us even discussing this. Why don't we take some other crazy idea of the left? Why aren't we all, okay, well, the first thing the Republican Congress is going to do is Bernie Sanders' idea for free college tuition. And in exchange, could we cut these little regulations? Why are we even discussing this? But okay, let's discuss it. Even if Congress were to limit it, as you say, to 800,000, I promise you, Lou Dobbs, any amnesty, it could be only for nuclear scientists. That is an amnesty for everyone. It is an amnesty for illegals who are not even in this country. Why? Because that's what happened in 1986. 20 years later, they were still processing illegals applying for amnesty under 1986. It goes to the courts. It goes to the Ninth Circuit. It goes to Hawaii judges. It goes to the INS, which is mostly run by, you know, former employees of La Raza. There is no way the most limited amnesty will be limited to, like I say, it could be redheaded nuclear scientists. It is an amnesty for the entire world.
She's right. She's absolutely right about that. It is really the case that when you give amnesty to some, it somehow morphs into being amnesty for everybody. Especially when you have these progressives in the courts, especially when you have the Ninth Circuit, especially when you have the Hawaiian judges, as she said, this is what happens. You get your foot in the door, the camel gets his nose under the tent, and all of a sudden, hey, what happened? It was supposed to be just this. How did it expand to all the rest of that? Well, because you gave a little. And when you give a little, sometimes you get way more than you bargained for. Now, one of the things that I think is important also to think about is who the DACA kids are, quote unquote, really are. This is something that Fair wrote about the Federation for American Immigration Reform on the DACA myth. The public narrative surrounding the DACA program is that it was put into place under Obama to protect kids who were brought here through no fault of their own. And they said they were almost universally Hispanic, and that as poverty-stricken citizens of Latin American republics a short distance away from the U.S., their parents' decision to violate immigration laws here was somehow legitimate. And they were also portrayed as brilliant valedictorians and proud members of the military. Well, the truth is, many of the DACA kids weren't brought here as young children. They were smuggled into the U.S. as tweens and teenagers. A large number of them weren't brought here by anybody either. They crossed the border themselves. One would expect that children brought to the U.S. between ages 8 and 18 would have some ability to speak the native language of the country where they were born. So the argument that the DACA kids would have a hard time reintegrating into their country of citizenship appears to be false. Right. How are they going to reintegrate into where they came from? Well, if you're 8 years old or if you're 18, you probably know the language of the country from which you came. Also, they're not all valedictorians. Over 2,000 individuals approved for DACA had their status terminated because they were convicted of crimes ranging from alien smuggling to sexual assault. And the number of DACA recipients subject to termination is still growing. By the way, fewer than 900 DACA recipients joined the military. So you don't want to get the wool pulled over your eyes. We'll see where this all goes, whether or not the Democrats will be willing to shut the government down in order not to hand President Trump another victory like he got with the tax issue. So we'll see how it goes. See how it goes. Now, another issue that I want to tell you about is something that happened this week. The Supreme Court declined to hear a case over that Mississippi law that allows public officials and businesses their religious freedom. Now, every time I read a story in the press about this, they always talk about how this is denying services to LGBT people on the basis of their religion. It's not what it is. The religious freedom law in Mississippi is all about recognizing First Amendment protections for people who have them. This is a fundamental element of what it means to be an American. It's in the First Amendment, not the 12th, not the 25th, not the 59th. And I know we only have 10, but you have to understand, in the Bill of Rights anyway, you have to understand that the First Amendment is vital. It's vital for our republic. You have to have freedom of speech. You have to have freedom of religion. And we recognize that the founders understood we have freedom of religion, not because the state granted it to us, but because we recognize we have that freedom given to us by God himself. And so every single story that you read, it's all about denying LGBT people service. Find me a case anywhere in America with these Christian bakers or florists in which they denied LGBT people service flat out. Or was it, I'll serve you anything you want. I'll do business with you. I'm happy to wait on you. I just can't do your cake. I just can't do your bouquets for your so-called wedding. That's what it's about. The case, Campaign for Southern Equality v. Bryant, challenges HB 1523. The name of it is the Protecting Freedom of Conscience from Government Discrimination Act, passed in March of 2016, and it allows clerks, registers of deeds, or their deputies to recuse themselves from issuing marriage licenses to homosexuals if it violates their religious beliefs or moral convictions, provides protections for three religious beliefs. One is that marriage is between a man and a woman. One is that sexual relations are properly reserved to such a marriage. And one is that one's gender is determined by anatomy and genetics at time of birth. It was struck down in June of 2016. But then a three-judge panel from the Fifth Circuit ruled last year that the plaintiffs failed to show how they have been or will be harmed by the law, reversed an injunction blocking it. And so then it was allowed to take effect in October. Now, this is good. The Supreme Court declined to hear a case over this. And so hopefully it will maintain its status and people will continue to have their religious freedom protected. Isn't it sad, though, that you have to have additional religious freedom protections at all? And I know we have them in RFRA and we've had them in other states, but we have a First Amendment. The issue ought to have been settled long ago and not messed with. But this is not how it works in an age of so-called gay rights. Well, we're out of time. We thank you so much for joining us here on Janet Mefford Today. God bless you, and we will see you next time. Be sure to visit us, janetmefford.com, our website, and we'll see you next time.